Chapter 3, Welcome to Dictionopolis.
"You must excuse my gruff conduct," the watchdog said, after they'd been driving for some time. "But you see, it's traditional for watchdogs to be ferocious."
Milo was so relieved at having escaped the doldrums that he assured the dog that he bore him no ill will, and in fact was very grateful for the assistance.
"Splendid!" shouted the watchdog. "I'm very pleased. I'm sure we'll be great friends for the rest of the trip. You may call me Tuck."
"That is a strange name for a dog who goes tick-tick-tick-tick-tick all day," said Milo. "Why didn't they call you—"
"Don't say it!"
gasped the dog, and Milo could see a tear well up in his eye. "I didn't mean to hurt your feelings," said Milo, not meaning to hurt his feelings.
"That's all right," said the dog, getting hold of himself. "It's an old story and a sad one, but I can tell it to you now. When my brother was born, the first pup in the family, my parents were overjoyed and immediately named him Tick, in expectation of the sound they were sure he'd make. On first winding him, they discovered to their horror that instead of going tick, 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 he went tock, 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 tock. They rushed to the Hall of Records to change the name, but too late. It had already been officially inscribed, and nothing could be done. When I arrived, they were determined not to make the same mistake twice, and since it seemed logical that all their children would make the same sound, they named me Tuck. Of course, you know the rest. My brother is called Tick because he goes tock, 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 tock. And I'm called Tuck because I go tick, 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 tick. And both of us are forever burdened with the wrong names. My parents were so overwrought that they gave up having any more children and devoted their lives to doing good work among the poor and hungry."
"But how did you become a watchdog?" interjected Milo, hoping to change the subject, as Tuck was sobbing quite loudly now.
"That," he said, rubbing a paw in his eye, "is also traditional. My family have always been watchdogs, from father to son, almost since time began. You see," he continued, beginning to feel better, "once there was no time at all, and people found it very inconvenient. They never knew whether they were eating lunch or dinner, and they were always missing trains. So time was invented to help them keep track of the day and get places when they should. When they began to count all the time that was available, what with 60 seconds in a minute, and 60 minutes in an hour, and 24 hours in a day, and 365 days in a year, it seemed as if there was much more than could ever be used. If there's so much of it, it couldn't be very valuable, was the general opinion, and it soon fell into disrepute. People wasted it and even gave it away. Then we were given the job of seeing that no one wasted time again," he said, sitting up proudly. "It's hard work, but a noble calling. For you see..." And now he was standing on the seat, one foot on the windshield, shouting with his arms outstretched, "It is our most valuable possession, more precious than diamonds. It marches on. It and tide wait for no man. And..."
At that point in the speech, the car hit a bump in the road, and the watchdog collapsed in a heap on the front seat, with his alarm again ringing furiously. "Are you all right?" shouted Milo.
"Umph," grunted Tuck. "Sorry to get carried away, but I think you get the point."
As they drove along, Tuck continued to explain the importance of time, quoting the old philosophers and poets, and illustrating each point with gestures that brought him perilously close to tumbling headlong from the speeding automobile. Before long, they saw in the distance the towers and flags of Dictionopolis sparkling in the sunshine, and in a few moments they reached the great wall and stood at the gateway to the city.
"Ahem!" roared the gateman, clearing his throat and snapping smartly to attention. "This is Dictionopolis, a happy kingdom, advantageously located in the foothills of confusion and caressed by gentle breezes from the Sea of Knowledge. Today, by royal proclamation, is market day. Have you come to buy or sell?"
"I beg your pardon?" said Milo.
Buy or sell," repeated the gateman impatiently. "Which is it? You must have come here for some reason."
"Well, I..." Milo began.
"Come now, if you don't have a reason, you must at least have an explanation, or certainly an excuse," interrupted the gateman.
Milo shook his head.
"Very serious, very serious," the gateman said, shaking his head also. "You can't get in without a reason."
He thought for a moment, and then continued,
"Wait a minute, maybe I have an old one you can use."
He took a battered suitcase from the gatehouse and began to rummage busily through it, mumbling to himself, "No, no, this won't do, no. Ah, this is fine," he cried triumphantly, holding up a small medallion on a chain. He dusted it off and engraved on one side were the words, "Why not? That's a good reason for almost anything. A bit used, perhaps, but still quite serviceable." And with that, he placed it around Milo's neck, pushed back the heavy iron gate, bowed low, and motioned them into the city. "I wonder what the market will be like," thought Milo, as they drove through the gate. But before there was time for an answer, they had driven into an immense square, crowded with long lines of stalls, heaped with merchandise, and decorated in gay-colored bunting. Overhead, a large banner proclaimed, "Welcome to the Word Market!" And from across the square, five very tall, thin gentlemen, regally dressed in silks and satins, plumed hats, and buckled shoes, rushed up to the car, stopped short, mopped five brows, caught five breaths, unrolled five parchments, and began talking in turn. "Greetings! Salutations! Welcome! Good afternoon! Hello!